Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Tom Miller, Ag and Natural Resources Agent in Ballard County, Kentucky. This week, we will discuss the Farm Bill and current USDA, ARC, and PLC farm programs. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us, and hope we enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
David, how are you doing this morning?
Pretty good. We're getting a little bit of rain here in Kentucky, so things are going along pretty good. So it's better than it was. We hadn't gotten a lot of rain, but we have. I actually saw some mud, believe it or not, feeding cows the other day, so I kind of liked it. First time I've seen none in a pretty good while.
we're recording this here in the first week of December 2022, and if you remember much about this year, it's been dry for the most part now. Yep. We live on averages, so you have to think that we're going to have a catch-up at some time or another, and that's pretty much been the past week to 10 days.
Yeah, and we hope we're going to get caught up all the way, you know, before we get back into the next growing season for sure.
You know, I was really surprised that there was enough moisture out there to even get some of this wheat up and out of the ground. I've seen some of it looks a little better than others, but you can definitely see the dry spots out there.
Right, the little grass seed that I planted laid there for about 6 weeks before it ever germinated, and it actually looks pretty decent right now. We've had some fair weather here in November, so hopefully it's going to live and make it through the summer, through the winter, so we'll see how it goes.
You're a little more optimistic than I am. I didn't seed any grass. This fall got some places that
I was hoping for rain when I've planted that, you know, but we didn't get any for forever, you know.
You know, I did get that call from more than one producer though about they'd seeded grass at a certain time and it's not come up. Do I need to redo it?
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah, I remember that.
And you know, I'm of the idea back then that, you know, just wait for some moisture and give it some time and hope you get that moisture before we get too many freezes under our belt.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely.
We have had a couple of freezes a little bit earlier. We had a little stint of cold weather, but been pretty mild for the most part this fall.
Yeah, I like this a lot better than I like cold weather.
Yeah. It's been foggy in my part of the world. I don't know about y'all's down here. Yep. You know, I am in West Kentucky, but I'm not in far West Kentucky. So
that's correct.
For folks that don't live in this part of Kentucky, there is West Kentucky, but as our guest, Mr. Tom Miller, he can attest that there's West Kentucky and there's far West Kentucky. So, but there is, it's been pretty foggy just about every morning. And, but we've picked up some
it's going to turn, supposed to turn off cold next week, maybe. So, probably some more seasonal weather coming, I suspect.
I used to get tickled at the weather forecasters, you know, in Lexington when I lived in that area. They'd point to the western part of the state and say Elizabethtown. Good ways from what we call West Kentucky. And as Vicki alluded to, our guest is even farther west than us. We've got Tom Miller with us today. He's the A&R agent in Ballard County, Kentucky. That's up on the tip of the state there where the Ohio and the Mississippi Rivers meet. So, Tom, welcome.
Good to be with y'all this morning. I was going to let you know, when you say far west, I'm as far west as you can go, right where the Ohio meets the Mississippi. And I can be in Illinois in 10 minutes. I can be in Missouri in 11 minutes. So it's as far west as you can go. This past year for us, we're just like you. We're dry. They've been talking about rain all week, and so far all we've gotten out of the 3 days of rain so far is a little bit of mist. Way behind, all the ponds are as dry as I've ever seen them this time of year going into winter. We had the old saying, we planted our wheat in the dust. Yep. For our bins to bust next year. Well, I have to say that the stands are amazingly good. I'm very, very well pleased with how well the wheat looks going into the winter. The other things, I had lots of guys that sowed some pasture. We're going to sow some pasture, redo some hay fields, and so far I'd say every bit of that's been a complete bust.
Really?
We'll just have to try again next spring on sowing some pasture. Now some of them went on and sowed some wheat, and they're gonna do some other things. You know, they may cut the wheat for hay, and then sow a summer annual and take the hay off that, then try to sow it again next fall. But this is about the third fall in a row we have not been very successful sowing anything.
Boy, you, they get you down too, yes, when you spend that kind of money, and for what seed costs now, and spend that kind of money, that really gets you kind of get you depressed about it for sure.
Well, and Tom touched on something there. How he's seen good wheat stands, but some of the pastures have been busting. I think that's a good lesson to think about. Is as you approach getting later in the year, you might have to change your strategy and actually change what you were thinking about planting. We know there's certain things that do better sown later in the year than others.
Just think about the size of that seed, how much bigger a wheat seed is than a grass seed. It's going to lay there a lot longer.
That's right. Yep. I was very pleasantly surprised, too, when you, like you said, on the wheat, I was coming back from Nashville there about the, I think it was the second week of November, and you know, I saw a lot of green wheat, you know, covered fields, and I was really shocked that the stand looked as good as it did. You know, of course, when you get out there and walk it, you know, I'm sure it didn't, it's a little bit thinner than maybe what they wanted, but it was definitely better than what I was expecting.
And I think some of this conventional wheat looks a little bit better than this no-till, to be honest with you. I've got a field of no-till beside my house that, to be honest with you, the stand in some places is not very good.
It's what I was talking about earlier, yeah.
It's hard for me to say, because I would say 95% of our wheat now is no-till. We've seen a big change in no-till wheat now. Now, very little of our corn is what we would consider no-till anymore.
Yep.
They all think they have to run something in front of planting it.
That vertical tillage that goes on in the fall is a big thing folks look at. We're comparing wheat and grass seed, though. Let's give wheat seed its due. It certainly is going into a much better prepared seed bed and more better fertility than what a lot of our pastures are when they're being seeded as well. So, a lot of pastures tend to get neglected, especially in years like this when the fertilizer prices have been what they've been. So,
let me give you a little bit of history of Ballard County. For those of you that don't know, we're far west as we can go. It's probably I came back. I've been the county agent there since 2000. And in those last 23 years, we've probably changed as much as any county in Kentucky. I actually grew up there, left and worked several other jobs, and had the opportunity to come back. And it's been great coming back to my home where I grew up. But, you know, when I was a kid, we had several dairies. Almost every farm in the county raised hogs. We had lots of cattle. Every farm in the county raised tobacco. We were the largest burley tobacco grower in the western part of the state. And the buyout happened in 2000, and it's amazing. I have one tobacco grower left in the whole county.
Wow.
Down from probably a little over 100 in the 1999-2000 years. Cows are probably down 90% from when I took over in the there's one dairy left. There are zero commercial pigs left. We've got several chicken houses, Pilgrim's Pride in Mayfield. We've got several growers. I don't know the exact number now, but approaching 100 total chicken houses in the county before it's.
And that's several chicken houses.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, and they chicken houses. You know, most of the early guys that got in were very successful. The good managers have been successful. This latest round of expansion, the houses are so much more expensive and so much more cost. We'll see. I think the jury's still out yet on the guys that just got in, but they've got an opportunity to be successful and to. What I want to say is diversify a little bit, because everything in Ballard County has gone to grain production.
Yeah.
Right.
Corn, wheat, double crop soybeans are a few single crop soybeans in the bottoms and things like that. But we're mainly a corn, wheat, double crop soybean rotation.
That being said, going back to the time when you graduated high school to now, have you seen much differences in the increase or the decrease of CRP acres in the state county?
No, I'd say there was a run there 20 or 30 years ago when there were quite a few CRP acres. I'm sorry.
I almost said it myself.
Well, I did take a CPR training a couple of weeks ago, so I'm certified.
It's on the brain, yeah.
I'm certified. If anything happens in the meeting, I'll try to take care of you.
It's good to know.
That's good to know. It's good to know.
But I'd say we've probably seen more ground come out of programs. So probably the biggest program now is a lot of the lower ground, the bottom ground, is in one of those 70-year tree programs, or in some of the lifetime tree programs where they've gone back in and mm-hmm. planted trees in the ground that we were productively farming. So
yeah,
we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, you know, you were mentioning about the chicken houses, and of course, Vicki and Jay and I all have poultry houses in our counties, and that's kind of a big deal. You know, these newer houses, to make those houses cash flow is going to be tough. Mm-hmm. As big as they are, and with what materials and those type of things cost, that whole cash flow in that deal is going to be tough.
And then you had the tornado hit all the Pilgrim's Pride facilities last year, and tore up their feed mill, mm-hmm. tore up their hatchery. So they've had to get feed from other places. They've had to get chickens from other places. I think they're just about now back to raising all their own chickens. And, you know, I don't care how good the chickens are, when you have to truck them 500 or 600 miles up here to put them in the house, it's just not as good as trucking them 30 miles away.
And that's exactly what happened when Tyson came to our area. They had the processing plant up and running before they had the houses built. And so, you know, they did the exact same thing. My brother actually, he farms, but he would contract with Tyson, and he would go pick up chickens and bring them back to the processing plant, and they did that. You know, they had several doing that, and it's definitely, like you said, it's not the best way to do it, but I guess you have to do what you got to do.
But you know, it's enabled some younger people to get involved in farming in our area, and maybe some been able to help some people stay in farming. To be honest with you, just to have some of their little income coming in some kind of way, you know.
I think it's helped in our area. It's helped keep the son a viable entity in the mm-hmm. operation. Mm-hmm. You know, we are not. We don't have. I don't understand all the reasons for it. In Ballard County, we've got 2 6,000-acre farmers. Those are the biggest, and everybody else is about 2,500, 3,000. Now, mm-hmm. you drop down to Carlisle County, Graves County, some of the other counties, you've got farmers farming 25, 30,000 acres. And, mm-hmm. and so far, we don't have that yet. So, you know, 2,500-acre farmers been able to bring the sun on by adding some chicken houses and things like that.
Right, yeah. It's in one particular that I can think of in my county, he was renting some houses and kind of working part-time doing some other stuff, but they actually built 4 of the mega houses. This was before all the high price lumber and everything, but that enabled him to come back to that operation full time. And I think that was kind of what their goal was.
So. Had a very similar situation in my county. A father sold his son his existing houses. And I think as much as anything, that was a credit deal. I'm actually the mentor on the son's mm-hmm. USDA loan program to mm-hmm. do that. But then the father, who had years of credit and years of management experience with Tyson's, went and built 4 new houses.
Yep.
So good to see that as a replacement way to bring people back to the farm. You know, you were mentioning all the tobacco you had in Ballard County at one time. That was the biggest thing I hated to see about the change in the tobacco program, is for years and still today, that would have been a way for a kid to get started farming. All you'd have had to have was a one-row setter and a small tractor and a little bit of ground to work, and you could have had a tobacco crop.
Yeah, I don't know how we used to raise tobacco, Tom. I mean, we used to raise some, and I don't know how we had time to raise it.
That's how did we have time to do it? I had a big farmer stop me out of church the other day. It was drizzling. He said, "Wouldn't you like to go take down about 10 acres of tobacco this afternoon?" And I thought, part of it at all anymore.
Yep, I'm with you. When we got out, I missed parts of it. Getting the money was the biggest part I missed, but there were some other parts that because we did everything as a family, and that was the big deal.
We did
and,
too.
And I think there's lots of kids that would benefit now
absolutely.
from having to work a little bit in tobacco, but I don't think we're ever going to get them to
you
do it.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Tom, because you know, growing up, I had to work in tobacco too, and of course, I always tell my age, but you know, pulling plants, I hated to go pull plants, you know, but we pulled plants and chopping it out and walking behind the setter. And I've told both of my girls, you know, it's a shame that my brother doesn't raise tobacco anymore, because if he did, y'all would really get to enjoy
wouldn't be much mouthing,
working in tobacco.
Wouldn't be much mouthing, is it?
The adoption of float plants, how quickly that it was adopted, shows you how bad a job pulling plants was.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was the best innovation that I personally loved.
And who thought that would have been as successful as it is, water and tobacco plants?
Yep.
And it took overnight. I mean,
that's exactly right.
It started 1 year, and the next year everybody had them.
Yep. I agree with that 100%. It was,
Vicky's talking about drawing plants, and you know, we all did that. My earliest job, the first job I could remember, was carrying tobacco plants for my grandfather, resetting tobacco, walking behind the setter.
Mm-hmm. So. Pegging tobacco.
Yep.
Dropping sticks is the first job I remember.
Yeah. And I think I've said this before, maybe on that first show, but, you know, my dad made me work in tobacco, but I did not have to cut it. I never had to cut tobacco, and I had to drop sticks.
He's just afraid you're going to cut yourself.
That's probably right. That's probably right. The best memory to me of tobacco, especially now that my dad's, you know, not with us anymore, but you know, working in tobacco, it was supposed to be oil and tobacco. I didn't have to do that either. Well, somebody didn't show up or they were sick. I can't remember. So Dad came and got me, and he said, "You're going to have to drive the tractor." And I said, "What?" You know, so, well, I couldn't turn it by myself. So talk about ag safety right here at its best. You know, Dad would get on there and get it straightened up, and I'd drive her down before we'd turn around. He'd get them back up there and jump up and turn it around, and we'd head back. But there's a lot of those stories. There's a lot of farm kids that's got a lot of stories just like that.
Lots of stuff that used to happen that is probably not very safe anymore.
It probably shouldn't have happened.
Right.
But it did.
But it did.
And we lived through it.
That's so. Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Better for it.
Yep, absolutely.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, Tom, you're with us today to talk about USDA programs, specifically ARC and PLC. We've been with this system for a while. We anticipate a new farm bill coming up next year. But tell us a little bit about your thoughts of the current programs and what producers need to be doing.
Okay, basically the producer has until March 15th to make his election for the 2023 crop. That's what we'll be doing up until March. Supposedly, this will be the last time that they make an election under this farm bill. Now, everybody knows the status of things in Washington, and I don't have a crystal ball, but it would not surprise me to see them not come to agreement and get a farm bill done this year. I could foresee extending the current farm bill we're on for another year. But we don't know what's going to happen. Let's talk about what's going to happen for the 2023 crop. We have harvested the 2022 crop, but we won't know the full answers for the 2022 crop until the marketing year average price for the 2022 crop gets set in September of 2023. So
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
the time.
makes a whole lot of sense. So you won't know the you're actually making a decision on what you think the price is going to be in September of 2024. So 18 months from now, what is the situation going to be in the grain market? That's what you're having to use to make this decision. Now, if I knew the answer to that question, I would not have to be an extension agent. I could do something else. But none of us know. None of us know what the answer to that question is. There are some places out there that try to project what they think the answer to that question is going to be. One of the best places I've found on the internet to learn about the Farm Bill is the Kansas State Farm Bill website. They've really got some good material on there. And they have a thing where they track the marketing year average price every month. They track it for the current year, and then they have a estimate of what they think the next year is going to be. And let's just look a little bit real quick at what they think the estimate for next year is going to be. And then that should tell us how you think you may want to decide what farm bill program you take. So, you know, we've had a wonderful run of high commodity prices.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's not going to last. Mm-hmm. When's it going to change? Nobody knows. That's the answer that we're all looking for. Kansas State is projecting the 2023 marketing year average price that will be discovered at the end of September 2024, $6.52 for corn. There's another place out of University of Missouri, which is called FAPRI. They also do an estimate. Theirs is quite a bit more conservative, $5.22. So we've got basically a dollar and a half, $1.30 range there, $5.22 to $6.52. Soybeans, Kansas State's saying $13.35. FAPRI's saying $12.36. So basically a dollar difference there. Mm-hmm. Wheat, Kansas State saying $9.10. We're way under that right now. So they're expecting the wheat market to go up. And then FAPRI's saying $7.11. So almost a $2 spread there on wheat. So think about the main two programs in the Farm Bill. What we're talking about now is strictly for probably Kentucky. Most of the grain crop areas that are similar, that grow corn, wheat, and soybeans, would have a similar answer to what we're talking about today. Now, some of the areas that grow cotton, I can't answer any questions about cotton. Some of the questions that grain sorghum is the main crop. It's probably going to be very similar to corn, but right now we're looking at grain-producing areas of Kentucky. You've got basically in this farm bill, you've got two programs, Arc County and PLC. Let's think about what they mean. PLC, price loss coverage, the only thing that matters for PLC is the price. That's the only consideration in the thing. If you think that the marketing year average price in the next 18 months is going to be below $3.70 on corn, that's what the PLC price is. That marketing year average price has to be below $3.70 before you get any payment. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we've looked at our estimates are at $6.52 and $5.52 for the conservative one. So something really historic is going to have to happen in the market. Something's going to really have to go wrong for the price to drop that much in the next 18 months. So looking at the same thing on soybeans. The PLC price on soybeans is $8.95. In the whole time of this farm bill, soybeans have never been that low. PLC has never paid on soybeans. Mm-hmm. Has paid on corn, has paid on wheat, but it's never paid on soybeans. So $8.95 on soybeans, and while we say soybeans, $13.35 to $12.36. So, so we're not nowhere close. I mean, something drastic's going to have to happen there. Wheat is a little bit closer. $5.50 is the PLC price on wheat. Okay, we're at $9.10 to $7.11. I don't think we're going to drop off that far. Who knows what's going to happen in Ukraine? You know, most of the things that happen in Ukraine are causing wheat to go up instead of going down. Yep. So, you know, we can talk about a little bit about Arc County and what it does, but just by looking at PLC and how it works, the price has got to drop that far before you ever get a payment. I hope there's no chance of you ever getting a payment if you chose PLC in the next 18 months.
I agree.
I agree. The things, and Tom, you can comment on this, is, you know, the things that are affecting our markets today. You know, back 20 years ago, things were a little different. You know, we had certain things, you know, when you had harvest, price go down and go back up. You know, it was pretty predictable.
Seasonal.
Yeah. Now, it's the most unpredictable thing on the planet, best I can tell. I mean, you know, there's so many other things that are affecting the grain market prices that don't have anything to do with the grain market. You know what I'm saying?
And I don't claim to be a grain market expert, but, you know, the funds buying in the market. But you look at the stock market, where I don't have any money right now, but if you had a lot of money, where would you go with it right now? I'm kind of scared to put it in the stock market. I can't afford $30,000 an acre of ground in Iowa like it's been going on. So it's just a, you know, commodity markets are one of the things that especially these funds and things like this use to balance out their.
Mm-hmm. No doubt they're tied together.
Yeah.
And when you think about the fact that we're producing and competing, if you will, in a world market versus the seasonal at-home market that we used to have, David, mm-hmm. all those factors come into play. You're talking about what you would do with money. Look at our land values. I think there's somewhat some of these real estate sales, we're starting to see the signs of 6.5% and 7% interest. They're starting to cap off. But it's not on your higher end. It's on your medium income type homes. Those are the people that are strongly affected by being able to borrow right now. Times past, as we've seen fluctuations in the stock market, that's when you see a strengthening in land values because folks look for other places to put their money. And that goes right along with putting some of these hedge funds and whatnot being speculators in the grain market.
Well, and you look, one other thing that's greatly, you wouldn't necessarily think about it, but the price of corn's tied pretty closely to the price of oil. If oil goes up, corn seems to go up. If oil comes down, and part of that's ethanol, part of it's other things. But there's a whole lot more than what happens on your farm involved in what the price of grain is anymore.
Certainly. And ethanol is a bigger factor in that corn market now because of oil prices than it's ever been. And I only see that growing in the future, I think, with the different green movements and whatnot. Regardless of who's in Washington at the time or which party's in power, I think we're only going to see a growth in these biofuel markets. It's a big, big push in soybeans right now to increase the amount of soy diesel that comes around. As we see that, we're going to see more of a use for our domestic beans, which should short the market, you know, globally on soybeans, our influence on soybeans anyway, and hopefully help those prices too.
You know, I remember when soy diesel was a novelty. I mean, I remember going to some tractor pulls, and they would have the soy diesel sticker on their tractor. And, I mean, you'd think – I mean, it wasn't really available to amount to anything, you know, but now it's a big push on these, you know, ethanol and all those different things that affect the grain market that, Tom, we were talking about 20 years ago or 25 didn't – you know, they weren't a player in the market, but they are now.
And you know, I'm going to step in. I think we have to see creative uses for our other grain crops like we've seen with corn through the years. At one time, corn plastics and things of that nature were just a byproduct. Now they're some of the most valuable parts of the corn outside of the ethanol. Yeah. We got to keep in mind the fact that we raise corn really to feed livestock, but it has become a tertiary use of the product compared to our other uses.
Yeah, and especially from somebody that actually buys feed. Livestock feed is high. I don't know if the three of y'all probably haven't bought any feed, but I bought a good bit here in the last little bit, and I'm going to tell you, it's probably as high as it's been, and probably $150 a ton higher than it was last year. So, I mean, it affects, you know, as the grain market eases up, so do feed prices, and, you know, same way with soybeans because of soybean meal and all those kind of things. So it's a – you know, it's a trickle-down effect for sure.
It is, and it's one of my biggest hopes for, you know, when we talk about biodiesel specifically, that will be a whole new use for the soybean crop, for the oil of the soybean crop on a much larger scale than it has been. I see that as a big, big plus for U.S. farmers in the long term, short run and the long term, just because it's more uses for that crop, more domestic uses for that crop.
Well, it's like Tom, Tom said early on, or you know, when you came to Ballard County, the changes from that point until now, just those huge changes, and that's just, you know, it seems like as each week when we talk about whatever the topic is, we're talking about how much things change, and you know, just and right now he's talking about the markets and what affects those markets and just all the changes that we did that nobody ever talked about. It's just agriculture is ever changing, and it like I said, with every topic, it just reminds me of how change happens. And I think I said it last week, but the only thing constant in our world is change, and that's becoming more true every day, I think.
You know, I told you a while ago the reasons not to take PLC. Well, let me talk about a few reasons for you to take ARC County. ARC County is different from PLC in that PLC is strictly price. ARC County is more of a revenue product if you're used to revenue crop insurance, similar to revenue crop insurance, but nothing like it. And also in the end, ARC County works on the county yield, takes the county yield and the market in your average price and gives you a certain guarantee based on that. Okay. And it's basing this year against the Olympic average of the last 5 years. So if your county does not matter at all what happens on your own particular farm. If the county has a yield loss, there could be a chance of getting an ARC payment. If the price comes down, there could be a chance of getting an ARC payment. So you've got kind of a two-layer approach of getting a little bit of payment on ARC County. I think there will be a few counties in Kentucky that had some poor corn yields this year that may qualify for a small ARC County payment. Of course, we won't know that till next September. Right. So when they really needed the money at the end of that bad crop year, they're not going to get it for another year. But I could see Christian and some of the southern tier counties that had some really stressed corn maybe getting some kind of small payment. Don't look for any large payments because it's mm-hmm. the price is still so high. Yep. That I think it would probably take somewhere near 100 bushels to get a county average about 100 bushels for you mm-hmm. to even see a corn payment. Yeah. Beans, I don't think there's any hope. Wheat, I don't think there's any hope yet. But, you know, ARC County gives you a little bit of protection on the price and the yield as it comes back down. So, you know, my thinking right now is everybody probably needs to sign all their corn, all their wheat, all their soybeans up for ARC County for next year.
So that's kind of a total revenue kind of. I mean, that's
kind of it. Like I say, it's a county level revenue instead of your farm, and it's going up against a 5 year Olympic average. What Olympic average means is they throw out the low year, throw out the high year, and average the middle three. So we've had some really good crops the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. We've had some really good prices the last 5 years. So so it's not. The important thing to remember on the farm bill is where the farmers get their most protection from is through the subsidy on crop insurance. Mm-hmm. We could not afford the crop insurance that we currently have if the government wasn't helping pay part of the premium. So that's where the farmers win mm-hmm. in the farm bill.
Yep.
So you had mentioned that the deadline to make your election on which way you're going to go is March the 15th. So is that open now? Can they call their FSA office now and do that? Or is there a window after the first of the year that opens? Or do you know that?
I think that may be individual to each FSA office. I know mine. I went in a couple of weeks ago to report my crops, actually report planting my wheat. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I just signed the paperwork to keep all my, you know. If people listen to what we said last year, they should already be in ARC County.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they will still have to fill out, sign their name on a piece of paper saying they want to stay that way. It's not an automatic.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's not an automatic election. You actually have to go in and do the sign up and all that kind of stuff.
But, you know, they've done it for 5 years now. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, in mine, you can do the majority of it over the phone and then just drop by and sign the paperwork, whatever. They know what they're doing mm-hmm. with it now.
Yeah.
They've had it long enough.
And I will say that they probably would appreciate that most people don't wait till March 15th to go in there and sign that paperwork. You know, if you can do it ahead of time, especially if you know what you're going to do, which I think, you know, like Tom said, I think most people already probably know what they're going to do. You know, you don't have to wait to that deadline just because that's the deadline.
And if something were to happen and these prices fall out of bed before March 15th, you can go back and change it before March 15th if you think you need to.
Right. Well, that's good to know, too.
You know, Tom, you like me, you've seen several of these programs come and go now through the years. How do you think the ARC and PLC will stack up against other programs we've had?
Jay, the best thing I can say about these programs is that we haven't needed them. Mm-hmm. We've had good yields, and we've had good prices. Yep. Now, the year that the price was down so much, people did get a little bit of payment on ARC County on wheat and corn. But, you know, overall, we haven't needed them. I'll go back to, as long as we can keep the subsidy for the crop insurance, the rest of these programs are gravy. It doesn't matter what this program does. Now, problems that I see, you know, we're going to be writing a new farm bill. What happens in the new farm bill? I think every one of us ought to be politicking. We don't care what kind of program you come up with, as long as you keep some form of the crop insurance with it.
Because, I mean, absolutely.
You know, the only year that we have needed crop insurance in my county was 2012, the year of the drought, and it worked about the way it was supposed to work.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
You know, this year we've got some, we may have a few farms in my county that may get some money from corn on crop insurance, but the rest of the county is going to be right in that range where they're not going to qualify. But but that's fine. The price is still up. We were one rain away from a total crop disaster this year, and we were one rain away from being about the best year we've ever had. So, you know, where you got rain, consider yourself lucky, and where you didn't, we're still going to be able to survive.
Yeah, we've seen that in our own areas. There's been places that, you know, in Vicky's County, if she hadn't told you yet, I think she's fixing to.
How good it really was.
I'll let y'all boys tell it.
It was all right. They're exactly as you said it, there was places that had the rain this year. Throughout Webster County was one of those places. David and I both traveling back and forth to Vicky's office, traveling the same areas, but we were able to see, and part of that extended into my county. I mean, it did. Mm-hmm. Basically, you could draw a line from Providence to Slaughter's. All that whole fairway through there was just, it got every rain it needed when it needed it. Nothing was ever stressed. Corn looked as good. Beans were
as
just
good
rank,
as anywhere
just
I
rank
saw,
looking.
As I saw anywhere in Kentucky. So. Yep.
Same thing in my county. North of Highway 60, everything was 200 bushels or better. Mm-hmm. South of Highway 60, it dropped all the way from 80 to 180, just depending on where you were and when it rained.
You know, I'll ask you, because we've all talked about it ourselves, how much that was influenced by the crop being planted on time, or was it planted late because of muddy conditions, or how did that play out in Ballard County?
We were planted a month late on everything, but I think the bright spot was planting that month late. We planted into much warmer conditions than we were ever used to before, and every grain came up. We had as good a stands this year as we've ever had on corn. And where it rained, it showed it. I mean, we had lots of corn over 200 bushels.
We talked about that on an earlier episode. Mm-hmm. How everything seemed like it wasn't there, and then all of a sudden it was there.
You know, we were kind of a garden spot early in that we were catching all the rain that nobody else was getting. And then about the 4th of July, when it quit, it quit. I haven't had to mow much in a long time.
Yeah, the difference between you and Vicky was that Vicky kept getting rain after the 4th of July. So,
you know, in my area, and I think David's was a lot this way too, is our June and July was flip-flop. Mm-hmm. We were super dry in June, throughout June, and then around 4th of July, we got a couple of rains. It was pretty good rains, but then they were over with, too.
But then, you know, Jay and I both live in Christian County. Of course, we work out of the county, Jay and Hopkins and me and McLean. But they were big differences there. And at my house, I mean, things were dry, and it was as bad as probably as I've seen it since 2012. But, you know, it in different in our counties that we worked, there were some places that did have some rains and did pretty good. I mean, from a corn yield standpoint in McLean County, I thought it was pretty good. I'm going to be real honest about it. And the beans were really good too. So, I mean, I don't think we fell off that much. You know, it wasn't a bumper crop by any means, but it was a good crop for sure.
Well, one thing for sure is every year brings challenges of some sort. There's not been a year yet that we haven't had challenges, and there won't be any moving forward where we won't have some challenges. But I think the bright light is, and I think that the, like you were talking about the PLC and the Arc County, I think the bright light is, Tom said it just a second ago, is we haven't had it. We hadn't needed it. Yeah. And I think that in itself shows that even through the challenges, even through all of that, it's still, you know, we still seem to be able to, as one of my farmers says, we still, they still seem to make it another year, it another round.
Wouldn't it be nice if all government programs were like that? They're there, but only if you need them and you don't need them. That'd be very, very nice.
So for the new farm bill, some of the things to think about. Kentucky is at a disadvantage over some of the other states in that they haven't had a program where we could update our base acres. These base acres, the farm bills doesn't care how many acres that you grow. It all depends on what the base is signed up your farm. So we've got a lot of farms in Kentucky in the, I would say, the historically non-grain growing areas of the state that don't have any base acres.
Right.
You know, they raise tobacco.
Never have had.
Yeah, they raise tobacco. They raise pasture. What corn they raised was for animal feed or for something else. So they are not able to participate in these programs as fully as, you know, Ballard County, it's not a problem. As you get up farther in central Kentucky, the areas up there that are growing grain now that used to didn't have grain, they don't have any base acres. So,
right. Even in some of our grain counties, though, I know from when my time working in Christian County, when that was last addressed and talked about, we had a lot of farms that maybe at one time, like you mentioned, had some livestock, had some pasture ground. Right. All the fence rows have been pushed out, and they're being cropped continuously, you know, from end to end. And they don't have the base acres to match the acres that they're actually growing.
Right. So sometimes we need to push for some kind of adjustment to let people update the base acres to more accurately reflect what's being done in the countryside.
I don't know that there won't be some opposition to that from some of our environmental groups and things like that, especially out in our prairie states. We hear a lot about our tall grass prairies being under attack, and we've even seen some animals, some birds recently listed on the endangered species group listing that probably people will push to keep a lot of that land in some type of prairie rather than being cropped. And I think for that same hand, you'll see a lot of people push for, in some of those areas, for more CRP acres. You know, we've got a cap on that right now, and I think if we do see a farm bill come about, that'll be some of the opposition that we might have. So, that being said, one of the things we like to do, Tom, at the end of the show is we always have a timely tip. And to go along with your talk this week on ARC and PLC and the deadlines that folks need to pay attention to, we thought we'd use that as our timely tip. So, this week, our timely tip is to contact your local USDA Service Center and learn and reaffirm those deadlines for all the farm programs that you have to sign up for. As Tom mentioned, he's already been in and signed those up for his own farm, but you have until March 15th to finalize that. So if you want to make any changes between now and then, you can. The biggest thing is know those deadlines and know that you have to go back in and re-sign up. It's not just an automatic because you did last year. So anything you want to add to that, Tom?
No, thank y'all for having me. I've enjoyed it. You were right. The time has flown by.
It does. That's right.
It's just like sitting down and having a conversation at the lunch table. We're just not eating in the middle of it.
You know, so. I probably understand better ARC PLC and ARC County. I mean, as Tom probably laid it out as simple as he possibly could have laid it for, especially for somebody that doesn't deal with that necessarily very much. But I think you laid that out easily to understand, Tom.
Me too.
I've heard Tom give this speech even to agents, you know, as a training before, and he did. He lays it out makes it very easy to understand.
Yep. And then, you know, because it seems like FSA always wants to make things more complicated than what it really needs to be.
Well, you know, FSA's problem, to their defense, they are not supposed to give you any advice.
No. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, you have very few places that you can come for advice on what to do for the programs. And I'll just tell you a little story if we've got time. Do you remember Acre Program?
Yeah, very well.
About 15 mm-hmm. years ago. We had a meeting in Ballard County for Acre program and had like 170 farms signed up for Acre. And then some of the other counties around didn't do anything. The next county over to me had three people signed up for Acre, and two of those came to my meeting. And I thought, I'm not going to, you know, we were short on agents. I decided I was not going to let lack of education be be the reason people didn't sign up for the Farm Bill programs that they needed to sign up for. So I've kind of made it a mission to make sure that the counties in my area were and the agents around were educated on what they need to do so that we don't fall into that trap again.
Well, that very thing is what has given you that reputation amongst agents. That's why we wanted to have you on here today, because people do look to you for that information, and you've been awful good about keeping up to date and making it, as David said, understandable for mm-hmm. everybody. So,
and on behalf of the agents around us and even further away out of your area, you know, I want to thank you for always doing that and for educating us, because it does make our lives easier. It helps us to understand it and then be able to in turn help our producer. So we do appreciate it. It's not unnoticed.
Absolutely. So, Tom, we appreciate you being here. I appreciate your friendship. We've been buddies a long time. You've just worked a few years less than I have. So we've been around and seen a lot of the same stuff. So glad to have you here with us today. And we want to thank you and thank our hosts for this week's information. And thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.